Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two lovely sponsors for you. Environments for Humans promoting their SaaS Summit. This is coming up November 6th, which is a Thursday. It's an online summit. You can attend it from anywhere in the world. It's the SaaS Summit. Literally go to saassummit.com. It's all about the CSS preprocessor SaaS, the most popular CSS preprocessor, the one we all know and love. It's going to be a full day of learning about that. Use discount code Shop Talk Show for 25% off registering for it. And lynda.com, that's lynda.com/shoptalk. Use that URL to sign up for 7 days for free. They have so many courses on there for learning about all kinds of different web-related things. We'll tell you about more about both of those sponsors later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Hello there, Shopomaniacs. You are listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about front-end web design development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hello, everybody, and with us, Bastion. Oh my gosh, I should have asked you the super perfect pronunciation, Allegor.
It's Allgeier, but don't worry
Allgeier,
about it.
Allgeier, I could have got that.
Awesome. Mm. On the first try also, that's pretty perfect.
Nice. So you are in Germany.
Yes, I am, exactly, in the south of Germany, south of Frankfurt, to be exactly about that.
Okay, cool. So, and born and raised, too, or have you bounced around?
Yeah, even further south, to the border of Switzerland. So, yeah, that's where I'm coming from.
Nice. And we met earlier this year in Dusseldorf, because we were at Mark Thiel's Beyond the Edge of the Plate conference.
Beyond Tolerant, yes. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, it was really cool. Mark runs a good conference over there with the little fancy red lamps on the tables and stuff. It was really cool. It was my first time in Germany. Really cool. Anyway, we got to talk in there. So you are you've done lots of stuff in the world. I think maybe the like one of the big old school things you did was ZooTool and that, and now are the person behind Kirby CMS, which is under a bit of a transformation, isn't it? Maybe you want to talk about some of those things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to. Love to. Yeah, exactly. I started ZooTool 6 years ago, I think, or seven, while I was still at university.
Uh-huh. And just a baby.
Yeah, it was my baby. When I was a baby and when the web was a baby and now whatever. Yeah, I had to shut it down recently, so that's kind of a sad story.
Yeah, I didn't mean to start with a sad one, but
there's Chris, lead in with some failures.
Oh my God!
Remember that time you stepped in the mud puddle?
Yeah, it can only get better from here.
But ZooTool was a pretty cool tool. It was like you could kind of like lasso screenshotty kind of any site you wanted.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. It was a visual bookmark service, so you could bookmark anything like websites, videos, images, whatever you found. It's a bit like Pinterest is now, but before that, sure. Long before that. And it never really worked out. It got a lot of users, but didn't work out financially, so at some point, I had to make a cut. That's okay. I'm fine with that. I'm over it.
Are you sure? No, it's cool because you have plenty of other things taking up your time, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this was another reason that I wanted to focus more on Kirby as well. And so the decision was pretty easy in the end. So Kirby is now my thing, which I'm running proudly.
I think there's probably some people out there that have heard of Kirby, some people out there that absolutely love Kirby, and some people out there that have absolutely no idea what we're talking about. So we should definitely do the, 3-minute, what is Kirby, why is Kirby thing?
Mm-hmm. It's a file-based CMS, not a static site generator, to make that clear right from the beginning. It's really using the file system as its database. It's a very small, flexible little tool, which can be very powerful still. And yeah, it's working that way that you have folders for your pages and subpages. And in that folders, you have text files, which contain all the data for the pages. And so you have kind of a NoSQL thingy, which can be very flexible in matters of the data. You can store pretty much any kind of data in those text files with a very simple syntax to group those in fields. And yeah, that's the basic of it. There's a web interface for it, so it's not only a file-based thing, but also you can use it like you would use any other CMS. And it's a lot of fun, in my opinion, to build things with it, but I'm totally biased, so don't believe me.
It is interesting, though. It lives in between the, like, the styles of databases that are heavy back-end UI and databases and stuff, and then the absolutely no server-side code ones like Jekyll. It's kind of like in between those, right? Because there is no database. The information comes from the files, but yet there is server-side code that runs, right? There's still some server-side code that runs to go get that file and make it into a template or whatever, or to create those files from the UI.
Yes, absolutely. It's really pretty much in between. The server-side part is pretty small, but it's still, it's there. But it takes care of a lot of dynamic stuff. So you are in between of this kind of static site generator where you make your decisions before you upload something to the server, and then you don't have any kind of dynamics afterwards. And with Kirby, you still have this kind of dynamic stuff. You can show random posts, for example, or do other kinds of things that would not be possible with a static site generator.
Ah, yeah. Because whatever kind of abilities a server-side language has, you have.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
It runs. That's pretty cool. And I'm full of questions about this. I'm a newbie that I haven't actually used it, but I have just recently had my first experience with Jekyll. So I'm kind of like I'm kind of a WordPress dude who's, making steps into other CMSs and stuff. And as the show goes on, we're going to have plenty of questions about WordPress and how these things relate. And this will be a CMS heavy show. And then I'm sure we'll pepper it with questions about like how Kirby would approach that type of thing. So yeah, hopefully that's cool.
I hope so.
So I have a live Kirby site, let's say, and I publish a new post. Mm-hmm. Kirby now makes a flat file for that blog post or page or whatever I've just created, and now that lives on my server as well. But I'm like, say, the kind of guy who likes to work through Git. How do I like keep those two things in sync? Can I pull down? How do I like pull down that post that lives on my live server to my local host? You just not is that kind of not how the workflow works in Kirby? Or?
You have different kinds of possible workflows. There are multiple ways to actually do that. The basis of Kirby is the files. So you could just go and without any web interface and just add folders and text files through Git. Maybe even connect them with Dropbox or connect your server with Dropbox and just manage those folders and files. But for some, this is too nerdy. And so what you can do as well is install the web interface, and that will create the folders and the files for you. So you will end up with the same kind of thing that you would have built by hand with a FTP client or command line or whatever. And so you can still check that in with Git and store the changes with Git. So it's quite flexible. You always end up with the same kind of structure, and you can do with it whatever you want and back it up in whatever way you want. And yeah, that's pretty much what it does.
Yeah, but then pulling it back down to local is just like you're just on your own, kind of. You would just maybe FTP in and grab those files back down, or
for example, you know, or you could just put it to GitHub and pull it from there. Or there are really multiple ways to do that. That's the cool part about it, about the file-based system, that you have this freedom to just move those files around however you like. You can just move it to a different server. You can use any kind of deploy service for it. It's totally up to you how you set this up.
That's pretty cool. What it does make possible is that you could totally use this with a client, right? Like, whereas Jekyll is, you know, if somebody writes in to this show, there's like, you know, could I use Jekyll as a client site? I'd probably lean towards no, because it's just so nerdy. You know, you're like, oh, just open the terminal and type Jekyll build after you've put these files in the exact right places and name them the exact right thing in the exact right format. Like, us nerds love stuff like that, but like, that's a lot to ask for a client. And you know, and then push it up to your live server because you can only Jekyll build locally. Like, that's just too much. But because this has a backend UI that you can customize, it's totally acceptable for client sites, you would think, right? If people are in the freelance game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even with the file system, I started with the file system version without the web interface. The web interface came later. And I created that for clients, for a design agency first, and then for some architecture bureaus. And they actually used their FTP client. They all had Transmit running and just connected to their servers. And then I told them how to add folders and those text files. And they felt completely comfortable with it because they use file servers all the time. I mean, designers and architects are also used to use file servers and move up their images. And they even had the advantage of having a very fast way to upload those stuff, because I mean, it's much faster to upload a bunch of images with an FTP client than with a web interface most of the times. But of course, this is a special kind of target group, and for other clients, this would not be possible. So the web interface is this kind of missing link for people who don't feel comfortable to use the file system.
Yeah, so it works for nerdy and non-nerdy clients, theoretically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So I think we'll have plenty of time to talk more about the Kirby stuff as some of the questions are centered around that. But another thing that is part of the Bastion experience is this idea of decentralization, right? Do you have any intro to that stuff that you'd like to share with us?
That's something I came to think about pretty much through Zootool, to be honest, because I started Zootool as a hosted service for other people to sign in and have an easy way to create their accounts and start collecting images and stuff like that. And I was running that for a pretty long time on my own, and it got a lot of users in the end, like 100,000 users. And I was pretty much overwhelmed by the amount of work I had to do for them, and mostly to keep their stuff secure, to keep the server secure, to make sure that everything is backupped and all those kind of stuff. And I was thinking about how many services we use on a daily basis are built in a similar way, not maybe with a one-man team, but a couple people, but we completely trust them to keep our data safe. And that felt kind of scary, and it felt like the wrong approach. And so I started to think about decentralization a bit. It's a complex topic, and maybe would be too long to talk here, but it's just, I think that we just have to find new ways to solve some of the problems that we think are already solved, but in a centralized way right now. And so that's what I've been caring about a lot in the last months. But not without problems. So it's also
it's
very
a kind
complex.
Of is the I think people maybe associate it with the own your own data kind of thing. Is that related but different?
It's totally
kind of like
related.
Anything that you. Okay.
It's totally related. I mean, it's about owning your own data. It's about privacy. It's about security, not being spied on. All those kinds of different topics come together in some ways, and it's interesting for me to think in a different way than I did before. When I started at university building Zootool, it was totally clear for me that I want to run a hosted service, and that I want to build something like that just because everybody did it. And in the end, I was really confronted with this problem that for me as a one-man team, it would have been easier to build a software which would be installable on the servers of users so that they could do something like install, pretty much what you do when you install WordPress on your server. So that would have been much easier for me to handle and maintain, because then the privacy part would be solved, that the backup part would have been solved, and not by me, and I wouldn't be responsible for all these kind of things.
Yeah, you're responsible for your own stuff. And it's not just you trying to be lazy, right? Saying, like, this is good.
No. It's not.
Believe me, this is good for you. Yeah.
It's not about being lazy. It's about being honest. Because, actually, we saw this kind of stuff happening to sites like Magnolia, where a one-man show just can be totally disastrous, and then everything goes down. And, yeah, I mean, it's not really the fault of one guy if you don't keep up with the things that you have to do for such a huge service. I think it's just kind of a stupid idea to do something like that.
Yeah, Magnolia was an interesting situation, right? It was like it was slightly different in that ZooTool, you didn't have any like major hacks or problems or anything. It was more of like a time and financial situation. Whereas Magnolia, I think they actually like lost data, right? And they're like, we screwed up the architecture. Everything is gone. Sorry, right?
Yeah, I mean, with ZooTool, similar situations happened to me as well. I mean, it turned out all good, but you probably don't want to know what happens behind all the scenes of different kinds of services.
Yeah, cool. So, all right. So, if people are interested in that, there is I remember at Beyond Telerin, you ran a little decentralized camp, which is a kind of a little mini conference that worked along with it. Are you going to do that again?
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, we had a little camp with about 80 people talking about decentralization, different kinds of aspects, software, hardware, politics, philosophy, all those kinds of aspects that circle around this topic. And it was a big fun. I hope that we can do it maybe next year. But I also must admit that it was a lot of work. I completely underestimated the time and effort you have to make to run such a little camp.
Yeah.
So I became a huge fan of Mark when I saw how much effort it is to run even such a small thing.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Okay, cool. So do you got anything else, Dave, or should we?
Well, no, I just was going to... Uh-oh. There's the sound effect for some hot drama. Wanted to let you guys know that Booking.com has posted this week on a blog post titled, "Would You Like Fries With That?" that using a hamburger menu is okay. So, hey, everybody, hamburger back in. It's okay now.
I saw that.
What is that? I want to see it. Where is it? I
didn't know that. So, blog.booking.com/hamburger menu.
Oh, my gosh. I am endlessly fascinated by this concept, mostly because as someone who is the builder of CodePen and looks through just about every single pen anybody's ever made on that every single day, it blows my mind that like people come there to build hamburgers like five times a day. You know, it's just amazing. I have a collection where I keep them all, but it's just something goes through people's mind. They're like, you know what, I have this idea on how to build this thing. We're gonna have three little divs, and you click them and it does transform 45 degrees on the top two and opacity zero on the middle one. And I don't know where I'm going with that, but it's kind of like it's endlessly fascinating to random designers, and that's like the UX of it aside. There's plenty of talks. I don't know if I've been to a conference in the last year that hasn't mentioned it at least once, you know, somebody either jabbing it or talking about how it works or doesn't work.
So I think it's a case of anything that's popular, people sort of rebut against.
Yes, I do.
I'm just
that.
Do you think? I don't know. Bastion, are you a hamburger lover or a hamburger hater? You live outside of Frankfurt, which I'm sure is a competitor to Hamburg, but
sausage wise, I use a hamburger icon in a new version of Kirby's Camel, but that's such a difficult question. I mean, it's I have not a really good opinion about it. I don't know. I think it's clear I mean, I think it's clear for some users, for a certain kind of target group, it's totally clear. I think it's easy to put that into some kind of interface for a web app, which is a bit techy, at least. But otherwise, I have no idea. I'm not sure if someone who is not too techy would recognize it and understand it immediately. I have no idea. I have no
You didn't even second guess it when you used it, though, right? You're just like, oh, that thing means menu. I'm just going to use it.
No, I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. I thought about using it together with the word menu, which is kind of stupid. Just menu, which is also kind of stupid. Then I just came up with the reduced version. And I think in the end, it was most about reducing the interface elements, a bit about being... making it a bit easier to be responsive, so that when the site is getting smaller, the interface is getting smaller, that you don't have to think about that much how you put everything in the top bar. It's kind of difficult. I mean, I find it super interesting that Apple is now introducing a new one with just two stripes. Is there already a name for that?
I don't even want to. It's just... I don't know.
What's that?
The Apple sandwich or whatever.
Yeah, what is it? Is it hot dog isn't right. I don't know.
I'm anti it. You know what? I'm sick of having opinions about it, but I'll take a stand on the one with two. It's like, oh my god, the entire web has picked the three lines as the one. And now you're like, this one has two lines. What? Oh my god.
It's breaking form for no reason.
Sort of. I think I'm going
for four. I wonder if Google has like some kind of patent or something on the three hamburger because they're using it in their stuff or whatever.
I think three is minimum. Four is fine. It's just it's you need at least three to have like a pattern going to make it look like a list of things.
Yeah.
Right. It looks like two lines hanging out.
Yeah, it looks broken. It,
right. What's the rule in grammar is like if you don't have a list of three items, don't make a list. Isn't that just comma? Just a bunch of commas?
Yeah, anyway. I'd agree on that.
So the booking.com, they do a lot of A-B testing and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think they make a good point. It's like if it bothers you, A-B test it. Mm. And if it like is in like use your data, like your users to decide if it's a good decision. And I think the other thing they did is they tested it. A lot of tests or like these kinds of blog posts will be like users click the navigation 0.014% less when it was a hamburger menu. You know, it's like this fraction of a fraction, which is like nothing. And their thing is like, does it interfere with like key results of our system? Like, does it, Were people unable to book like hotels and stuff based on this data from this hamburger menu? So I think that's smarter too, is like, are users able to get around and is it fine? You know, and then it might just be a design choice at that point. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good. So
the drama continues. It is not over yet. I think the three lined menu is going to win.
Dude. I think it has to. And it's just like, cool, three-line menu doesn't work. What else are you going to do? And some of them are like, oh, you have like a tab bar at the bottom, like five things. It's like, cool, that works on like three mobile browsers ever. Now what? You know? Fixed positioning.
Or the word menu or whatever. All right, let's get over with this. I hate talking about that dumb little thing. Not to be negative, but it's like, oh my god. Three lines.
All right.
Let's get into the Q&A. You ready? There's some other things. I even have more questions, but we might as well get into some questions after I do a sponsor, I guess, because we might as well do that. Sorry to derail it, but let's do the SAS Summit. So the URL for that is SASS, like Syntastically Awesome Style Sheets, right? The CSS preprocessor. SAS Summit. So there's like ends up being like three S's in the middle there. SASSummit.com will redirect you to where you need to go. A full day deep dive into SAS from setting up, workflow, foundations, to learning the cutting edge stuff and what's coming in newer versions of SAS. So that's pretty darn cool. Use discount code 25% off for your ticket to the SAS Summit. It's a one-day thing. You can attend it from anywhere in the world, right? Because you just watch it through your web browser and watch people present live, and you see them and you see their slides and you see the chat room, or you can ask questions and It's a pretty darn cool thing. And it's a little bit less expensive than real life conferences because you don't have to buy a plane ticket or a hotel and all that type of stuff. And just the tickets for the event are a little less expensive than they normally are. It's $179 to go to a conference. I'd say that's in the inexpensive range for conferences, period. So pretty darn cool, especially with the discount code that we're offering. That's SAS Summit.com. SAS, clearly the winner of the preprocessors at the moment. I'd be interested to see. It feels like this thing is starting to shake out, this little battle of CSS preprocessors, but I'm not sure it's over yet. I'm starting to think that, like, if there was like a node port of SAS, then it would just for sure win.
Like Stylus?
Right, like Stylus, but SAS, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is,
but the fact that it's still the one that really works well is on Ruby or whatever, I feel like that's like, it's starting to get a little bit more painful to people.
Yeah, no, it is for me. And that's why I want to watch this. Like, there's a lot of cool grid things and stuff, but they're all kind of Ruby based, you know, it's like my kingdom for like somebody solving things without Ruby.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard, like, I want to use SAS, but, like, it's the I have to then add Ruby to my stack for one thing. Anyway, it's still, like, totally awesome, and I use it for everything. So I'm not trying to, like, not talk bad about SAS, but I feel like that would, if SAS really wanted to, like, put the nail in the coffin as the winner forever, it would just be, like, no more of this weird libSAS stuff. It would just be like a node.
Then you got
SAS.
JavaScript generating CSS, which, beautiful, which can generate HTML. It's the perfect funnel.
Heard it here first. All right. Okay, so that's SASSummit.com. Let's do a question. We have one here from Chris Burton, who I know is anxious to hear this. Chris is an active member of the forums on CSS Tricks, and he says, in there, you can usually find me recommending Kirby to just about anyone struggling with WordPress. Most of the questions are usually regarding basic functionality, for example, custom post types. Other than installing, which has to be one of this, meaning custom post types, has to be one of the easiest things to do in Kirby that doesn't require a plugin. Other than that, there's lots of web articles around the web from web developers that kind of just talk about WordPress's bad architecture. So the question is, was WordPress an inspiration to you for what not to do when building a CMS? So that's kind of a loaded question. We can feel how Chris feels about WordPress here, and I wonder if you feel the same way or what.
No, I'm definitely not here to bash WordPress. I must admit that I've never really used WordPress. I installed it a couple times, but I haven't done any client projects on WordPress, so I can't really hate it because I can't tell that much about it. It's the inspiration to do things in Kirby differently than many other content management systems do comes from different systems. It's a mixture of different things I tried over the years. And so it's not specifically a WordPress hater system. Definitely not. I mean, I guess people tell me that things are easier with Kirby than with WordPress, but I think WordPress has achieved so many great things, and it would be wrong to say that it's a crappy system. I mean, it's
still decentralized.
It's still decentralized, and what they achieved with it is amazing. I would love to even have a fraction of the usage that WordPress has.
But still, there's no database. You know, like, you took like a different way, you know. You might use more, but whatever, what people might consider a modern approach to things or whatever. It is fundamentally different. You chose not to use MySQL and stuff like that. What was the inspiration for that? If you're not anti WordPress, are you anti MySQL or not? Would you not even take a stand on something like that?
No, I think what led to that was more like I started building content management systems about 10 years ago for different client projects, and they started like horrible systems that I should have never built, very insecure and horrible systems. But I started to build my own custom systems for clients because often I couldn't really find the perfect solution, what I had in mind to make it easy for clients to do things. And all those systems never really sticked. So I built a client project and I built one system. And then for the next client project, I felt like it would need a different system. And so that happened a couple times and was completely out of control. And at one point I started, I was asked by a client to build a newsletter content management system. They wanted to have something very simple, very inexpensive for them to build like HTML newsletters. And I couldn't convince them to go for MailChimp or Campaign Monitor. And so I thought that it would be the easiest and inexpensive solution for me to build them kind of a file-based little thing that just fetches content from a text file and puts them together in an HTML template for the newsletter. And it turned out to work really, really well. And so the idea came up when friends asked me to build them their website for their agency to do the same thing, but for an entire website and build a content management system out of it. And the file approach turned out to be so flexible that it was the first system that I built personally that sticked. So I used it for many other projects afterwards, and it evolved from there. And so that's basically the story of Kirby, just finding my own perfect tool for my clients and then making the decision that other people might like it too.
Very cool. I mean, of course, like all good software comes from a real need that you really had, right? It's not like you plucked down some idea from the sky and be like, I think I'll do this random thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have two. There's two more questions here before we can get to the next one that I feel like people want to know and I want to know and stuff. One is your business approach to Kirby is you like, and we had Rachel on from Perch who has a similar model. It's like you want to use this thing, you buy it, and then you can use it. You know, it's not. It's actually kind of like not open source, right?
Yeah, but it's in Kirby. It's completely different because. What I do with Kirby is kind of a strange mixture between open source and commercial product. So what I did for Kirby is to put the entire source code on GitHub without any limitations, without any obfuscation of code. It's completely there, completely. And you can just grab it and try it as long as you want. And I completely encourage people to do that. So everyone can just grab the code and play with it as long as you want on your local machine, on a test server, wherever. I don't really care. What I want, and that is not just some marketing bullshit, I want that people like the system before they pay for it. And so the license, you just buy the license pretty much when you are done with the project. And the license doesn't change.
Is there anything that prevents you from having it live? Is there some kind of code in there that makes it
nothing.
Not work?
No. There's completely no anti-piracy solution in there at all. No checking at some server of if the license code is correct, nothing. And I did that decision, and many people, when I started and told people about it, many came to me and said, that's completely ridiculous. It's never going to work out. People will never pay for it. But it totally works. And what's great, in my opinion, is that it gives me this kind of feeling that I have an open source project. On the one hand, it's not really open source, I know, but the transparency of an open source project, and still people pay for it. And I did that because realistically I failed with ZooTool just because I couldn't make any money out of it, and I didn't have the time and the finances to run the service anymore. And that somehow told me that if I want to do something that I want to focus on and make it better and make it grow, I really have to make money out of it. It's that easy. And so the decision was pretty easy that Kirby has to make any money if it from my opinion, wants to grow, or if I want to make it grow. And but I wanted to have this kind of transparency and this fairness that open source projects have, so that you can check out the code and be sure that it's the right thing for you, and then you make the decision to buy it.
Yeah. It's pretty darn cool, really. That's interesting. Although, you know, just for the other side of it, you know, I feel like nobody's going to be mad at you if you do charge for it. You know, I feel like you probably, you know, and maybe you don't or whatever, you probably would make more money if you just straight up charged for it. But you just kind of like don't like that approach, or, you know, and I'm not trying to influence you one way or another, but it's kind of like if you're struggling with it or anything, there's certainly there's more money to be made when you straight up charge for something, or is like the benefit you get from having it be open source grows you better, or maybe there's another way you could monetize it and be like, all this is free unless you need like the super cool video plugin, and then that's $20 or something. Mm. Have you thought about ways to do that? Or I don't know. I'm not trying to taint your methods here.
No. You're absolutely right. I mean, I think about this all the time. I mean, I think about pricing it differently all the time. I think about closing it down, or not closing it down in the sense of closing it down, but you know what I mean, making it
closed source.
Closed source. But there are many aspects which lead to this kind of, or led to this kind of decision. And one is that I feel better about it, even if that sounds strange. Then I think, or I also experienced that I have less support requests from people who thought they might like it but don't, and want the refund or something like that. I have I had two refund requests in 2.5 years, so
that's kind of
cool, because you know, when someone buys a license, you know that they like it, and that's awesome. And I don't often have to argue with people about things are not the way they expected it to be and things like that. And I kind of like this. It feels good when people give me the money, because I know I'm not talking them into kind of some kind of bullshit. I think it's also some kind of freedom that this approach gives me, because it's easier to move around or not feel this kind of heavy burden on my shoulders that I have to keep up with something. There's still this option, if it doesn't work out, to make it fully open source with an easier shift. Not that I plan to do that, but it's in my mind. These are those kind of things that you have in your mind when you run a one-man project, at least I do, and you have to care about it on a daily basis, and you think about those things that somehow feel heavy on your shoulders, and how to make them easier. And this approach was somehow is somehow making it easier for me to run this.
Cool. Very, very cool. I hope it all works out. I mean, it seems like, you know, a good project that really so many people love, that I know Jessica Hish uses it on her site and stuff. It seems like it's got to work.
It's a model that wouldn't work with lots of software. I think it works because the target audience is developers, and they use it for their clients. And most developers, if they use it for their clients, they can't steal it. I think some will do it, but most will have this kind of fairness, and especially with this low price, to just buy the license and put it on the invoice of a client. So it's not a big deal. It's a no-brainer, in my opinion. And that's what makes it work. And I'm totally happy with the sales. It could be more, but I don't know how much more it could be. I would have to try that out, but I don't want to. And so I'm completely, completely happy with it.
Cool. You have 22 open issues and 28 closed issues on GitHub. So it's also not like flying with it. I think you're like, the open source management part of it isn't like insane yet on GitHub, right? Is it you kind of hope to keep it that way? I mean, what if people open 50 issues a day? You know, that would probably suck, right?
Yeah, that would suck. No, it would suck. I mean, it wouldn't really suck, because it also means that
means you're
really
so big
care about
that,
it.
Yeah.
Okay, but if it's growing bigger, there must be probably some different kind of decision. But I think it's not in the market for being a huge CMS that is being used by millions of people. I think it's this nice kind of niche product that people love to build creative websites for their clients, high quality stuff, and that's fine. That's exactly what it's made for. I have a lot more issues, to be honest, on GitHub for the new version, and I'm very happy about that, because most of those issues are feedback, wishes, so yeah, all those kind of stuff. And it's really, really awesome to have That's another part. It's awesome to have people talk about this kind of stuff and exactly talk about the code and check out the code and yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I really like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's clearly related to some work that I do. You know, I work a lot on CodePen, and it's not open source. It's on GitHub, but it's a private project, and it's a totally different approach. And it's not because I hate open source. Clearly, I love open source, but it's just this one feels too weird to open source. It'd be too much work. It'd be too specialized in what we show and don't show to have a version of it. I'm not sure how, but we have, you know, competitors or apps that are in the same market, like JSBin, which is great, but that is open source, and they manage somehow to traverse that line pretty much. But clearly, they have a ton of management to do with that open. And I feel like I would be so beholden to that that it would be hard for me to work on what I wanted to work on. You know, and I don't know. It's just interesting to me. I have no answers for it, but it's certainly something that's always on my mind.
Yeah, completely. I mean, with Zootool, it was kind of a similar thing. When I shut it down, people always wrote me and said, just open source it. We would love to keep it going. And I always replied that I can't make it open source for similar reasons that you just mentioned. I mean, it was kind of my own construction that wouldn't have been able to put it out there and give it to people.
And then you're responsible for it too. Opening source isn't just here's the code. Like, maybe you could do that if somebody else was then responsible for its open sourceness. Yeah. Yeah. But you are when you do that, you know.
And that's what people forget about open source all the time. And it's also another reason for this kind of business model that I wanted to make sure or make clear that I'm there to care for it. And if I want to have the time focus on it, then people need to pay me. Otherwise, I will have to make client projects and I won't have that time. And it's a bit sad that there is this clear separation of commercial stuff and open source. And in my opinion, there are missing models for making open source more beneficial for those who run it. In different kinds of ways. I mean, GitTip is one way to give back to people who build something and make it open source, but there is not much that you can do. Some projects have donate buttons, which might work or might not, I don't know. And so it was kind of an experiment if it is possible to run something like Kirby in this intersection between commercial and open source and see if there's different kind of options to run open source projects and but also get paid for it. And I think it's totally possible, and it's sad that too few people try it.
Yeah. Food for thought, everyone. We have some more questions, even a sub part of that question. We're not getting through the questions very fast, but that's okay because this is an excellent conversation. I do want to mention lynda.com, though. That's lynda.com/shoptalk. Remember, that's for your 7-day free trial, which we've talked about before. I think this is really clever. Like, if you're going to, like, you know that you're going to be, like, on a long flight or something, you could time up that 7-day free trial just right so that you can binge watch a bunch of stuff, you know, rather than just, like, sign up today, even though you're super busy and it's the beginning of the week or whatever. Do that instead, like right before you know you have a bunch of free time, which is a pretty cool thing. Anyway, lynda.com has like thousands of courses on it. You know, you go to their homepage and just look at the numbers of the courses that they have that are broken up into sections. They, of course, have lots of stuff on web design and development and stuff. I was just poking through their hundreds of courses on web development, and there's like Amazon Web Services Essential Training, Effective Design of RESTful APIs, Up and Running with Laravel, which is the super popular new PHP framework that's totally worth a look because it's not like, even though PHP frameworks have kind of been cool, Laravel seems to be like totally taking the crown as far as like really cool ones that have like advanced routing and, you know, like just, I'm not even qualified to talk about all that stuff, but it's just like not your mama's PHP or whatever. jQuery mobile essential training. You know, just go through the list. It's like, oh my God, anything you want to learn in the world is in here with long organized, I did a lynda.com course on WordPress themes, which is a couple years old now, but I was like aware at the time that this thing needed to last through time. So it's kind of like it's still relevant. I feel like it's like how you would approach building a WordPress theme. Anyway, so much stuff on there. It works with your iPad app, all kinds of awesome stuff. You'll love it, I think, especially with your 7-day free trial. That's lynda.com/shoptalk. Here's a big one for you, Bastian. V2, what's happening?
Oh, lots of stuff. It took me so long to build that, and it's finally coming to an end. I hope that I can release it in the next 2 weeks. I completely lost track over time, and I'm just currently writing the docs about it. And so I suddenly start to realize again what is all in there. I mean, I did a complete rewrite, basically. So I somehow thought that would be a good idea. It is a good idea in the end, but it was a lot of work. And I just throw away all the old code and came up with completely new code and lots of new ideas in there. And It's a bit difficult to say what is the most important new feature. I guess it's a completely new web interface, which is much, much better than the old one, which is probably one of the most important things for most people. If you want, it's all on v2.getkirby.com if you want to check it out.
Really?
There's lots of, I released a preview of the new site and docs just recently, and so you can just browse the docs and see what's new in there. It's a lot of stuff, making templating easier, making fetching data easier. It's becoming much more like a tool set. Has always been the plan for Kirby, to be more like a tool set, not the pre-built plug-and-play thing that you have with most content management systems. So you have more like a content management Lego, if you wish, where you have just different parts that you can stick together in any kind of combination that you want. And so you get user management, for example, for front-end users and all those kind of things. You can work with different languages. You have multi-language support built in. You have lots and lots of different API features for the templates, which you can use to fetch pretty much any kind of data that you've stored, and any kind of image, any kind of video, any kind of document. Yeah, it's pretty massive.
Wow. It's a big rewrite. So check it out, people, at v2.getkirby.com. And we don't have to hold you to it, but you did say a couple weeks, huh? It's coming up.
Yeah, anxiety is building up big time.
Good luck.
It's crazy.
I was thinking of templating as kind of interesting, just kind of poking through these docs a little bit. It's kind of like it's just like echoing stuff and calling functions. Right, is
yeah,
kind of the approach to templating. It's not a specific templating language.
No, that was a decision I made pretty much in the beginning to keep it with PHP. And there has been a lot of discussion, but also a lot of people really like that approach because it's down to the metal, if you wish. So you really have just PHP and you write PHP. And when you start with Kirby, what you learn is PHP. You don't learn any kind of template language
Twigger.
That I came up with. Yeah, don't know. I mean, I think you can do more if you learn the basics of PHP than you can do with a template language in the end.
That's the WordPress approach too, to be honest. You know, they don't.
That's a WordPress approach, but it's what Kirby does a bit different is that it is very much inspired. The API is inspired by jQuery, so you have a lot of chaining. You can do things like ask for a page and then get the title of that page, and it's all pretty much done with chaining like you have in jQuery. It looks pretty jQuery-ish, even if it's PHP. Mm-hmm. So I think that people will feel familiar with it pretty soon, even if they don't have any idea about PHP.
Cool. The specific question we had about it was, we have one here from Philip Payton who says, I was looking for a CMS to use for client sites and I came across Pyro CMS. I've never heard of it, but it's just, you know, there's 20 million of these things. After installing Pyro CMS to WAMP, which is like a, you know, local software to run the dependencies you need, like MySQL and PHP, I was very impressed. I love the features it provides out of the box, users, blog, etc., along with how easy it is to develop a custom theme. And it says it uses the double curly bracket syntax rather than PHP. And he just wants to know what are our thoughts on Pyro CMS. Unfortunately, I can't tell you, Philip, because I don't know much. But I can tell just by your question that it runs on MySQL and PHP and uses a double curly bracket syntax, which leads me to believe it's probably Twig in, you know, or it invented its own thing. But Twig is like a popular templating thing for PHP that we just talked about is something that like WordPress and Kirby don't use. So anyway, I just maybe we could wrap up our discussion on templating with that. So Philip is like kind of likes that double curly brackety kind of thing. Is I don't know. Final thoughts, I guess.
Yeah, I can't say much about it. I've written a blog post about my thoughts on writing templates with PHP.
Oh, so, nice.
Yeah, it's in the Kirby blog, and we maybe can put it in the link list later.
Yeah.
So, I just think that you learn the right thing if you go for PHP basics, if you work with a PHP content management system, because you can use it for all kinds of different aspects of the system later. And I get a lot of feedback from people telling me that they hadn't any idea about PHP and they learned the basics of PHP with Kirby. And the best thing that can happen, in my opinion. If you can lead people to check out a language, even if most people hate PHP in the end, but I think it's a good thing to learn a programming language and not a template language in the first place.
Yeah, it's hard to even make that call because I feel like people early on make some kind of CMS choice and it just does it the way that it does it, and then you learn that, and then maybe your future preferences are aligned with that just because you made a choice before you were aware that you were even making a choice, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like when I first picked up WordPress, I was like, ooh, I like how it, you know, is down to the metal with its theming, you know. Like, I wasn't thinking about that. I was just like, oh, this is how it does it? Cool. I guess I'll try to bend it to my will there. But it ends up being a big choice later. And
yeah.
Okay. Do you want to pick one out, Dave?
Yes, here's one from Dylan Simmons. Writes in, I am a front-end developer in the initial planning of a blogging site and am feeling a little overwhelmed by CMS options. Is WordPress still king, or is it worth to look up an up-and-coming CMS like Ghost or something? With all the features necessary, comments, archiving, and search functionality, it seems like a CMS is the obvious choice as opposed to starting from scratch. Any personal insights on the blogging CMS game would be much
the reason this is interesting, if I could start, is that you just, you know, Dylan just put in like a parenthesis in this question and just listed out a few things that he needed out of this CMS, which included comments and archive and search functionality. And those are like not just like, you know, like, is that the complete list, Dylan? Or like, I feel like when you're at this moment, you really need to think about a more robust list than that. And in the previous question, it mentioned users as well with Pyro CMS. So there's some kind of authentication system and users with different levels of like abilities, like authentication levels. Those are like big things, right? Like, especially like comments. That's like a thing that a CMS could approach or totally not approach and be like BYO. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, you know, I know this is talking about WordPress and Ghost and stuff, but of course this is relevant to Kirby as well. Like, what if a user really needs like a login system? Do you have that with Kirby? Because you must, right? Because it has a UI of some kind for building pages. You can't, not anybody can do that, right? You have to log in somehow, right?
Yeah, it is a big question. And I mean, in general, it is a huge question which CMS to go for. And it's kind of overwhelming completely. I mean, I spent the last 10 years being overwhelmed by the CMS choices and
not getting any easier.
No, definitely not. Kirby has user authentication for Kirby 2. It does not have a common system so far. So far, I went with Discus, which is not the best solution in any case. If you really want some very robust, huge block system, you probably still want to go for something like WordPress or Ghost. But if you, it's very difficult. It depends a lot on what you have, what you want to build. What I try with Kirby is that you don't have to make too many choices in the beginning, because most things that are not there yet can be built very easily. So it's not a system that is built around a huge plug-in community or a theme community, but something that you can use to build your own stuff. And it teaches you to build your own stuff instead of giving you just any plugins and then you throw it at them and then you end up with something that works or doesn't. And I think that way, personally, is what I wanted to achieve with that, is that people somehow learn how to make things instead of just plug-and-play design. But that might be right for some and might not be right for others. It's the same kind of question all the time, and you probably won't get around just trying different options and see what works best for you in the end.
So weird. We even have a question in the chat room from David Darns, who says, is there a which CMS should I use flowchart? And that's the kind of thing that there probably is, but it's probably not good. It's probably not something that I would recommend looking at, because this thing is so complicated. So if we look at the checklist a little bit, they're like, okay, one of the questions that might be on a flowchart like this is, do I need comments? And it might say yes or no. And then it might lead you to ones that have comments or not, right? And it might say, well, Kirby doesn't have comments. But that's not necessarily true, right? Kirby supports Discus, but it's not even a method of supports. Any CMS could support Discus. I know I said the name of it different twice in a row there. I don't know if it's Discus or Discus. It's really weird. It's Discus, like the word, the proper word.
Because people get disgusted if you say it.
That's good. You nailed it.
Don't you have some kind of sound effect for that?
Yeah, maybe I do. I should. I need to be more on the soundboard here.
But you know what I mean, right? It's like.
Exactly.
But no, you like WordPress. It would show up as has comments.
Yeah, but even if you're in WordPress, you might still want to use Discus for other reasons. How do you answer that in a flowchart way? There's already infinite infinite loops and stuff happening there. And then okay, does it have archives? Well, WordPress does kind of have a built-in archiving thing, but because Kirby is just some flat CMS kind of thing, it means that it was probably very easy to build a page that is an archive with just simple PHP commands and stuff. And then you get a more customized archive. So it's not a yes or no kind of answer. And then it's like, okay, does it have search functionality? I have no idea if Kirby does or doesn't. WordPress does, but it's kind of bad. And it's like, well, either of these ones could implement something like Google personal site search super easily, and then it doesn't matter which CMS you're using. So it's kind of like this CMS question is like every question will be tainted in a workflow, in some kind of flow chart. You know, every question will not be totally the right way to ask it, you know. See, it's ultimately just like how do you want to store data essentially? What's the UI like? What does it feel like to use that CMS? How easy is it to build custom pages and stuff like that? Those are the right questions, and those are so hard to answer and so like personal feelings related that it's like, how do you, I don't know.
I mean, it's a lot about this idea that something comes out of the box, and that is never true. You always have to bend the product to come up with what you want. And so you should find something that is very easy for you to bend and make it your own. And so that is what Kirby is trying. That is what ProcessWire is trying. So I just read a fantastic comment from the ProcessWire main developer who wrote about this, teaching people how to fish, if you wish, and so instead of just giving them what they think they need and making it easier for them to grow into a system and use it however they want. And that is exactly what I'm trying with Kirby, and there are probably more systems that work in the same way that are very easy to use and extend and build your own things around that. And I think you always want to go for that kind of systems.
It seems like that's kind of like the challenge. It's again that fear of using the wrong tool. What if I choose the wrong CMS? But it's almost like you just need to go to the webpage of a CMS you heard about. And if you like read through the documentation and it makes even just a little sense, it is kind of for you. And that's the challenge of the CMS manufacturer, is making it easy to like understand how it works.
Absolutely.
One thing that WordPress did really well was it made it easy to install. Like installing movable type was like you had to sacrifice two goats and pray to your gods that like these Perl modules would actually upload it, like 100 megs of them. But WordPress was like, hey, one click and it installs and it's done. And then we give you automatic upgrades and it doesn't break kind of thing. And so that like increased the API that they built, and that's just the application protocol interface, just how you interface with their application made it really good. And that's like the same reason jQuery is better than using using the document query selector all, because the syntax is just beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you have two kind of target groups when you build CMS. You have the clients that want to use it and add their content and edit content and make it easy for them to do that. And you also have the developers that want an easy way to use it for their clients. And so it's very difficult to build something that is perfect for both target groups and to write documentation for both target groups. It's very challenging.
Yeah, it's tough. It's like it's the marketing kind of thing. Yeah. Adoption and marketing and then just being a really, really cutting edge product kind of thing. It's tough. All right. Well, where are we at? Oh, we are over time. Oh my goodness here. Bastian, thank you so much for coming on the show. For people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they follow you, give you money, and then what's the one big thing you'd like to plug before you leave?
They can give me money at getkirby.com. That's the easiest way. Bing. And follow me on Twitter at Bastian Algaia, even if probably nobody will be able to write that from what I just said. Maybe you can put it somewhere. And getkirby on Twitter, you can also follow that. Getkirby, very easy. The one last thing, just look out for Kirby 2. I think it's going to be a pretty big release. It's going to be a free upgrade. So if you already have a Kirby website, you're going to have a free upgrade, because I want everybody to have the new version.
Nice.
Now, that's pretty much it.
Wow. Incredible. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much. And thanks, everyone, for coming out, listening live in the chat room and downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to take the time and vote us up. That's how people find out about the Shop Talk show. Or you can tweet on your social medias. Be sure to follow us at Shop Talk Show on Twitter. And Chris, you got anything you'd like to
Shoptalkshow.com.